It's good to see people here. It's good to see people on Zoom as we have this amazing privilege of coming and spending time with God and with each other. And yeah, I'm going to share some further reflections on this thing that we're talking about, the public context. And we say further reflections because some of you will have seen a video I recorded that went out on Friday with some initial ideas about Jesus in demonstrating what it means to be with a large group of people and meet with God. And that's what they've gone to discuss in those various rooms. And we're going to think about a few more examples of Jesus in that public context. Because as someone who spent 3 years of his life in a very public ministry, travelling up and down the country, doing lots and lots of things, it would have been very surprising if we did not see Jesus operating in some very public contexts. Just as we would find it surprising today if politicians did not speak to large crowds, just as we've seen recently in party conferences. If pop stars or comedians did not perform in large venues, it's part of what they do. And thinking about the party conferences, they're a great example, I think, of these types of gatherings. When we think about what goes on in those places, the party faithful attend to be encouraged and informed about what's going on. There's an opportunity to look back over what has happened and to look forward to what is ahead. The leaders of the party outline their plans and ideas. People are sent back to their homes and constituencies encouraged or otherwise to take the message to the people. That's what we see in these conferences. For Jesus, it was a bit different. He was not the recognized leader of a large movement. He was a traveling preacher, a healer. He had a small group of followers. Major events were not organized for him to attend. And so there were a number of different ways in which he engaged in this type of public context. People were attracted to him due to his powerful words and his amazing acts of healing, his demonstration of power in so many ways. And he used those opportunities to speak God's word into their lives. He took advantage of opportunities that just came up in normal life to speak truth to people. He entered into settings where people had come to worship and to reflect on God, and he added his own distinctive voice into what was going on. And this morning we're going to look at examples of each of these to see how Jesus engaged in them, to see who they were for, to draw lessons and inspiration from them for our own situation. It's important to remember that while there was organized religion at the time of Jesus, and we will see some of that, we will reflect on some of that, it was too soon for any idea of an organized church. We see that starting to develop after the death and resurrection of Jesus, after Jesus has gone back to heaven and his followers established that early church. It was too early for any of that. And so we might find the lack of certain things in the example of Jesus surprising. And we need to bear that in mind. But let's be prepared to be inspired and challenged by the example of Jesus. And one of the most well-known blocks of teaching delivered by Jesus, and Heather referred to it earlier, is known as the Sermon on the Mount. And we find this in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. We're going to look at a number of different things this morning. So please take time when you get home or when you've got a chance to look at some of these passages and see what they are saying to you. So this Sermon on the Mount, chapter 5, 6, and 7, it's introduced at the end of chapter 4. We find that large crowds are following Jesus. So he's in a place where there are lots and lots of people around him. And then at the beginning of chapter 5, Jesus sees these crowds and he goes up on a mountainside and he sat down. Heather was saying that reflecting on in the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus encouraged people to sit down so they were comfortable. In the time of Jesus also, when a teacher sat down, it was a demonstration that he was just about to start teaching. So people would have been aware that something was going on. And he went up the mountain a little way. He'd be more visible to those who were watching. And the acoustics of the place where we think he was made it possible for somebody speaking to be heard over large distances. So that's sort of the context of what was going on. But before he starts to teach, in chapter 5, verse 2, we see that he calls his disciples to him. There's these large crowds of people who have come for all sorts of reasons to experience something of Jesus. But he takes a moment to just call his followers to him, those who have said, yes, I want to follow Jesus. So we got this picture of Jesus at the center, his disciples just around him, and the general crowds are a bit further away. They would have been able to hear what Jesus was saying, but his focus was on those who had already made that decision to follow him. So there is little in this sermon about making a decision to follow Jesus or how that's impossible, what is involved in doing that. But there is so much in this sermon about what it means to follow Jesus, what is expected of those people who have made that commitment. Now, as the crowds listened, some of whom would have made that decision, some would not, they would have started to understand a bit more about what was involved in following Jesus. Some might have found that attractive and wanted to become closer to him. Some might have thought that was a bit too demanding and thought, well, it's time to go home. But whatever their personal response to the words of Jesus, if we go to the end of this block of teaching, we find in chapter 7, verse 28 and 29, that the crowds were amazed at the authority and the powerful impact of what he said. So what was it that produced such a response? We haven't got time to look at this sermon in detail this morning. I'm just going to pick out a few things from it. The first is, in the opening few verses, we see that Jesus starts his sermon with a series of sayings about how people experience blessing. And some of these sayings would have been very surprising. Surprising to us, and surprising to the people who heard them for the first time when Jesus was speaking. He says in verse 4 that we are blessed when we mourn. I was with a lady yesterday whose husband died a few weeks ago. Tim reminded us earlier of Helen, who died a few weeks ago. And there are times when we grieve and when we mourn. Jesus says in some way we can experience blessing through those times. He goes on in verse 5, we are blessed if we are meek. Verse 10, we are even blessed when we are persecuted for standing up for what is right. And people would have taken time to think, how does this work? What does this mean? Does this stack up with my experience of life? Does this resonate with what I consider to be important? It would have encouraged them to have a long-term, maybe an eternal perspective on what was going on in their lives as Jesus spoke about what was really involved in experiencing God's blessing. He goes on to say in the next verses that his followers have a high calling and purpose to be salt and light to the earth, to hold back decay, to bring hope into darkness. Something that would have been really encouraging for those who were seeking a purpose in life. Jesus is saying, if you follow me, I can give you a real reason for living and you'll be a blessing to many. And then he goes on, spending quite a bit of time talking about what they would have heard from their law. Many of the people around him would have been observant followers of the Jewish law. And Jesus, there's a number of blocks that he goes on to say, you have heard that it was said, and he refers to something in the Old Testament law, But then Jesus says, but I want you to know, I want you to understand that there is something deeper. He shows them that just doing what the law said wasn't enough, but that our thoughts and our desires behind what we do are just as important. And we need to get those right as well. And then he also takes time to engage with current debates that are going on. In chapter 5, 33 to 37, he discusses swearing oaths and whether it is right to do, whether it is not right to do, whether you take an oath or whether you simply say what you believe to be true. There was a big debate that was going on at the time of Jesus. And some Jewish teachers of the day warned against taking oaths, saying you should never do it. Others defended the practice. Others avoided taking an oath at all. Others, it was common practice. And Jesus is getting involved in that discussion. And he critiques some of the things that were going on. He says that's not right. But he also calls for a high degree of honesty, of total integrity, so that oath-taking would become totally unnecessary. Jesus is calling for a higher standard of behavior and engagement from his followers. This is what he expects of them. And these words of Jesus, spoken out publicly, would have caused people to stop and to think, would have encouraged people in their calling to follow him, would have spoken directly into the practices of their day. And even though many different groups of people would have heard his words, these crowds who were all around them, his focus was on those who had already committed to follow him and explaining to them how they should live. When we come together, as the people of God, as people who have chosen to follow Jesus, as people have said, yes, we are committed to what Jesus is calling us to do, when we come together in these contexts together, we need to be prepared to once again submit and surrender ourselves to the words of Jesus, to hear what he wants to say to us today, and for our lives to be changed as a result, to hear and to do what Jesus is saying. And that's one of the things we look for as we come together like this, to experience, to listen to Jesus, and to be obedient to his call on our life. But as I said, there are other ways in which Jesus engages in these types of contexts, because there were occasions in the life of Jesus when he was in the middle of doing something, often with a large crowd around him, and something happened to interrupt. Something cropped up. Heather was speaking here a few moments ago, and a young girl came and interrupted her and asked Heather for something. And Heather responded to that young girl. For a moment, the focus that Heather had was on that girl, not on the rest of us. And I think that's something we see in the life of Jesus. And it's interesting to see how Jesus responds. But before we look at one of those examples, let's think about how we think about that today. Some of you know that before I became involved in full-time church leadership, I worked in the IT environment. Lots of stuff to do with computers and great. It was great fun. And one of the things I did was I spent time delivering training courses to other people. I made large presentations to significant clients, 30, 40, 50 people in the room, trying to convince them that we could do what they wanted us to do. And one of the things we did before starting to teach a session or to present some ideas was to try and ensure that everyone had got their phones set on silent so that we were not interrupted. We were making the statement that what we were doing in that room for that 30 minutes or hour or 2 hours or whatever it was, that was our priority. That was what we wanted people to focus on. But a few years ago, I was in Thailand. I was visiting a Bible college and I found a very different way of doing things. It was a different culture, so it's understandable that things are done differently. And in that culture, there was the very clear idea of hierarchy, of who was most important. And if a lecturer was standing up, preparing to teach a lesson, and his phone rang. He would look to see who was calling, and if that person was deemed to be more important to him than his students, he would take that call. He would respond to this new person for however long it would take. All his students would have to wait. And this would have been totally accepted and understood by his students, as they were part of that culture as well. They knew that's how things worked. Different ways of doing things. Now, I will admit, if everyone's phone starts ringing now and you all start talking to the people on the other end, I would find it a bit frustrating. Probably the people around would as well. Because we have different ways of doing things. And Jesus, often, not always, but often his response was more like the Thailand way of doing things than what we do here. Take, for example, the time when he was walking to Jerusalem with his death on the cross just ahead of him. His last time to go to Jerusalem before those terrible days when he was taken and tried and crucified. Something that would have focused the mind. He knew what was ahead of him. Something to think about. And there was a large crowd of people around him. And I'm sure there were many things that he wanted to tell them. He was busy. He was involved. He was committed to what he was doing. And you can read this story in Mark 10, 46 to 52. And as Jesus and the crowd who were with him left Jericho, the city he had just visited, they come across a blind man sitting on the edge of the road begging. It was the only way he could get money or food. And somehow he hears that Jesus is passing by. He's clearly heard something about who Jesus was and what he was able to do. Maybe he'd heard of Jesus helping blind people to see. And he desperately hopes that Jesus can do something for him as well. Now, lots of people in the crowd, maybe because they wanted to protect Jesus from these interruptions, maybe they wanted to keep his focus on them, they tried to make Bartimaeus, that was the man's name, they tried to make him be quiet. But he continued to shout out until Jesus stopped and told people to call Bartimaeus to him. Suddenly, in the midst of everything else that was going on, in the middle of that very public context, the focus had changed to be Jesus and this one man, just as earlier it changed to be Heather and that one young girl. A man who asked Jesus for the ability to see and to whom Jesus granted that wish. When we meet together in contexts like this, we probably all have expectations. Those of us who are involved in preparing and leading services have a plan. You might not believe it, but it's true. We have a plan for what we expect to happen. Those of us who come to engage in these services will have our own expectation of what is going to take place, what we are hoping for from these times. And we can find it very difficult if that routine is challenged, is changed, if that expectation is not met. But I believe this is something, looking at the example of Jesus, we do very much need to be open to. If we're in the middle of something, and suddenly there is an interruption by the Spirit, if we get a clear sense that Jesus wants to focus our attention on something else, or the needs of a particular person, let's be ready and prepared to do that. I remember a time when my youngest son, who's a pastor in a large church down south, was just about to get up and speak to the congregation. And he'd prepared what he was going to say. And he believed God was saying to him that actually he should put that aside and speak about something totally different without any preparation whatsoever. And that's what God was calling him to do, and that's what he did, and it was a blessing to people. And we have plans, and that's good and that's right. But sometimes, always, we need to be open to what God might want to do, how God might want to interrupt our plans so that we are open to what Jesus wants to do amongst us. But there's also something about how Jesus brings his voice, his distinctive voice, into conversations. As a travelling preacher, Jesus spent a lot of time in the open air speaking to the people he met. He was walking down along the road, he met some people, he got involved in conversation with them. He told them stories. He healed people. But also, as an observant Jew, he and his friends would have met with others in their synagogues, their sort of churches, places to worship and receive teaching. And he would have taught there as well. So he took the opportunities that planned services provided to bring his voice and his words to people. And one great example of this is found in John chapter 7, which speaks about something known as the Festival of Tabernacles. This was one of the three great annual festivals for the people of Israel. It took place at the time of harvest to demonstrate how grateful they were for God's provision. And the people were called to take branches from the trees around them to build tents and to live in them for 7 days. As a reminder of the 40 years they spent wandering in the wilderness, living in tents after God had rescued them from slavery in Egypt. Now, if we read the story, we find that Jesus had initially said he was not going to attend. But halfway through, he does appear and he starts to teach. And again, just as in the Sermon on the Mount, he amazes his listeners by the power of his teaching. The Jews there were amazed and asked, how did this man get such learning without having been taught? And as the festival continues and as Jesus begins to teach, his words become more controversial. And some find what he is saying really appealing. Others felt challenged by what he was doing and tried to arrest him. Then on the last day of the feast, Jesus stands up in the middle of it all and cries out with a powerful invitation. He stood and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." Jesus is recognizing that many people were finding life hard. Maybe did not know where to get the energy and the strength to carry on. And he extends an open invitation to anyone to come to him and drink. So he comes into this context where people are worshipping, meeting with God, and he brings his own special words and insight into that environment. He's echoing the words of Isaiah, a prophet of long ago, where in his book, chapter 55, God has invited his people to return to him. He says, "Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. You who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost." Jesus takes those words and says that these blessings are available through him. It is free. It costs nothing. It provides all that they will need. And he goes on to say that not only will people get what they need for themselves, but as a consequence of believing in Jesus, this blessing will flow from Jesus through them to others as well. Living water will flow from within them. And the writer of the gospel provides a bit of detail, explains what Jesus means. That he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. Because up to that time, the Spirit had not been given. Jesus is offering to pour out the Spirit of God into the lives of those who follow him, so that they are refreshed, restored, and strengthened. And he is promising that then, through them, that same Spirit will flow out to others. It's an amazing, it's a wonderful thing. This is one of the vital things that we should be looking for as we meet together in contexts, in gatherings like this. To receive from Jesus, to be filled again with his Spirit, to be strengthened and restored, to be recharged, maybe to be healed of what's happened to us during the week, so that we can go back into our homes, into our communities, into our workplaces, into our families, and be a blessing. Not in our own strength, but in the strength and power made available to us in the Spirit. This is something that we can receive and be blessed by as we come to meet together with God. And as Heather said earlier, there are many other settings where we find Jesus operating in a very public context. And do take time to read about them, to reflect on them, to think about them, to think about what the example and practice of Jesus has to say about what is important when we're to gather together like this. Heather spent some time thinking about the feeding of the 5,000 when Jesus provided food for more than 5,000 people at a time. And if we look at that story, we find that Jesus is motivated by compassion. He provides healing for those who are sick. He provides plenty to eat for all of them. There was a time in the beginning of Mark chapter 3 where in the middle of a service, in the middle of a synagogue service, Jesus notices a man with a shriveled hand, and he chose that opportunity to engage with him and to heal him, even as some of those around objected, saying that was inappropriate to do on that day in that context. Sometimes we get the idea that Jesus is acting like a lecturer as he delivers powerful message to crowds of people. On other occasions, even in a large crowd, Jesus engages in conversation with individuals and develops ideas and truths that are important for everyone to hear. Sometimes he had to tell his chosen followers, those who had committed themselves to following him, that they had got things wrong, such as the time they tried to prevent parents bringing their children to be blessed by Jesus. As he rides into Jerusalem on a colt, we read this story in Mark 11 and elsewhere. Being welcomed as king, he's very much at the centre of what is going on, and many people are contributing to his worship and the celebration. An opportunity for people to express how they feel about him and to give thanks to God for him. And as Heather was saying, that's one of the things we want to encourage, to provide an opportunity as we meet together to share what God is doing amongst us. So what does all this mean for when we come together? What is important to us as we gather? It raises questions, it provides some guidelines about what we should be doing. People are coming back to join us, and that's great. I'll just finish with a few things to reflect on as we come together. These are times when we come and listen to God's word, where we engage with it, where we hear the challenge of Jesus and surrender ourselves to him again. These are times when we are prepared to be interrupted to follow the prompting of the Spirit, to respond to the situations of individuals, for our plans and expectations to be overturned under the guidance and direction of God. These are times when we can receive deeply from God, where we can reflect on what has been happening in the previous week, where we can find healing and restoration for all the challenges we have faced, where we can find the strength, the desire, the enthusiasm to go back into our communities, our situations, and continue to be a blessing. These are times when we can know the privilege of being ministered to by Jesus and receiving his blessing on our lives. These are times when we are prepared to listen to what God wants to say to us. Times when we are actively involved in that conversation with him and with each other. These are times when we are prepared to hear the correcting word of Jesus and to change what we do as a result. Much of this is similar to what we have been doing as we have met together for years. Some of the principles and the ideas here will involve us thinking and acting differently. And let's be prepared to do that as we gather together with a deep desire to worship, to grow, to be restored, to be recharged and equipped to become more like Jesus. Thank you, and God bless you.